So by saying these names, we come directly in touch with the personal Shaktis and with not just the Shakti, but Krishna himself in the form of his name. And when we're close to fire, we'll feel the heat. All of the potencies of Krishna will purify us, purify the heart, purify the mind and senses. And this is the process recommended in the Brihat Naradiya Purana, Harirnama, Harirnama, Harirnam, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatiranyata. That in the Kali Yuga age, there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way except chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names. So there are 64 items of devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught these to Sanatana Goswami. You'll find that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita when you read into the Madhya Lila, 22nd chapter. There are instructions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives throughout several chapters to Sanatana Goswami. And in that he speaks about 64 items of devotional service. And out of all of them, he said, the most important is the chanting of Hare Krishna. In Navadvip, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met a devotee named Tapan Mishra. And Tapan Mishra had been reading many books and hearing from many people. And the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita points out that this is not the way to become self-realized. Hearing from many, many people and reading many, many books, then one becomes confused. If one becomes a bookworm, he says, then you'll hear so many things. So someone recommended that he go to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he fell down at his lotus feet and he said, please tell me the process and what the goal of life is. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, obtaining love for Krishna is the purpose of life, and the process to get there is by chanting the holy names of the Lord. So he instructed him to chant Hare Krishna nonstop. And Tapan Mishra desired to stay in Navadvip with Mahaprabhu, but Mahaprabhu sent him to Varanasi, which is full of impersonalists. Who could understand the plan that later on Mahaprabhu would go there and convert Prakashananda Saraswati and all his followers, and Tapan and Mishra would be there to host the Lord when he came to Varanasi. In any case, Kali Yuga is such a confused age, and it's a very difficult time. Prayanal payusha shabya kalavas minyugejana manda sumanda mantayo manda bhakya hupadrita. This was seen by the sages at Naimasaranya early on, that they foresaw that in the age of Kali, they said, men would have but short lives, they would be quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed. And therefore, they wanted to know what is the process by which people could cross over this ocean of faults in the Kali Yuga. And later on in the Bhagavatam, the answers come to this. And this process of Bhagavat Marg, especially the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is recommended in the age of Kali Yuga for perfection. So everyone can take advantage of chanting the holy names in a family, in a town, wherever we are. If we organize our life around chanting Hare Krishna, then we'll attain rapid advancement. We'll get rapid advancement in spiritual life by connection with Krishna through his holy name. Any question about that or comment? Is that what your experience is? You're finding that? Chanting? Yeah? Chanting on beads, keeping track every day, and keeping numerical strength, and then increasing, and also doing kirtan and propagating kirtan, all these kinds of things, staying close to the holy name, these will very rapidly call our success in devotional service. Let's hear from the Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna. This is chapter 9, It's on page 395. And this is the most confidential knowledge. And let's read the translations all the way through. And let's read three each, and you can pass the microphone around. And Gauranga, would you please start? Yeah. Three each. No, just sing, read the translation.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self by realization. It is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed." Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world.
By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I'm not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. Understand that as the mighty wind, blowing everywhere, rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me.
O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. The whole cosmic order is under me, under my will. It is automatically manifested again and again. Under my will, it is annihilated at the end. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am never detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. I'm ever detached.
This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated.
O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down for me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as the one without a second, as diverse in many and in universal form.
But it is I who am the ritual, I the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors and healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable Om. I am also the Rig, the Sama, and the Yajur Vedas.
I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place and the eternal seat. O Arjuna, I give heat and I withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and I am also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the poise, heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights.
When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Those who are devotees of other gods and who worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way.
I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize me and recognize my true transcendental nature fall down. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, a fruit or water, I will accept it.
Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. In this way, you will be freed from bondage to work and its auspicious and its inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and come to me. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. I'll read one more. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination.
He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare the Bodhi that my devotee never perishes. O son of Pirta, those who take shelter in me, though they would be lower birth women, Vaishyas, and Sudras, can attain the supreme destination. How much more is this righteous Brahmanas, the devotees, and the sainty kids, kings? Therefore, having to come to this temporarily miserable world, engaging in the love service until me.
Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me.
And we're going to hear the text 30 on page 436. No, excuse me. I was looking for 29 on page 434. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. Name dveshosti na priyaha. Ye bhajanti tu mam bhaktya. Mai te teshu chapyaham. Samaha. Equally disposed. Aham. I. Sarvabhuteshu. To all living entities. Na. No one. May, to me, dveshaha, hateful, asti, is, na, nor, priyaha, dear, yea, those who, bhajanti, render transcendental service. Two, but, mam, unto me, bhaktya, in devotion, mayi, are in me, te, such persons, teshu, in them, cha, also, api, certainly, aham, I. Translation, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. One may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his personal friend, then why does he take special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not discrimination. It is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity, in whatever form, is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of the necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives special attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. The very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists, situated in him. The Lord says here distinctly, mayi te, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the words yeyata mam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. Whoever surrenders unto me proportionately, I take care of him. This transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified, and at the same time, the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter. And when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotees. If a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personalist philosophy. In the impersonal philosophy, there is no reciprocation between the Supreme and the living entity. But in the personalist philosophy, there is. The example is often given that the Lord is like a desire tree, and whatever one wants from this desire tree, the Lord supplies. But here, the explanation is more complete. The Lord is here stated to be partial to the devotees. This is the manifestation of the Lord's special mercy to the devotees. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the law of karma. It belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotees function. Devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It is part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss, and knowledge predominate. Particularly, I like in this purport the statement Prabhupada makes that both the living entities and the Lord are conscious, both sentient beings. And therefore, what is consciousness, actually? It's different from matter, that much we know. Well, we understand from Shastra, and we can observe for ourselves the difference between matter and consciousness. And Krishna points this out several places in the Bhagavad Gita. Indriyani prayanyahur indriyebhya paramanaha manasastu parabhutir yo bhude paratastu saha. He gives a hierarchy beginning with the senses. And senses indicate their sense objects also. So senses mean in the body there are 10 working senses and there are 10 knowledge gathering senses. And what are they made of? They're made of the what is called the Mahabhuta. And Krishna mentions those elements in the Mahabhuta in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhumir apu anulovayu kamano bhutirevacha. He mentions earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So out of those, five are considered to be the five great elements within the creation. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And that is what the five senses working and the five knowledge-gathering senses are made out of. So what are the senses? They're conveniently all grouped about the head, most of them, the knowledge-gathering senses, aren't they? You think about it, we're like a walking computer or something. But you have eyes, which are amazing. So you just look out and you can see things. How's the light refracting and it gets translated through the brain. Eyes, then what else do you have? Nose, smell, and then ears. They're all right up in here. And then tongue. And then tactile. The tactiles, you can have. I always am amazed at this. I'm driving in my car and I need something out of my bag on my in the back seat. And I'll just reach over. And my hand can tell what it is. And it's like, how'd you do that? You grab the right thing every time, you know. That's not it. That's it. Tactile sense. So there's those senses, and then there's the five working senses, and those are pretty amazing too. You have arms and legs. That's one, two. Then you have belly and the elimination system, digestion, genitals, procreating system, and what? And the voice. So those are the five and five, and then you have five elements. And then the mind is also, it's considered the sixth sense, which Krishna speaks about. Manakshastan indriyani prakritistani karshati. There's all these senses grouped about the mind. There's the mind that runs the whole thing, and there are all these senses that can do all kinds of stuff. And so those senses are there. So indriyani priyanyahur indriya panamanaha. So Krishna talks about the hierarchy. From the sense objects, above them is are the senses, and then above the senses is the mind. Above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul proper. And he says in the 13th chapter that knowledge means to know the difference between those. Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayo jnanam yathach jnanam matam mama. Actually, Jari Welpu's favorite verse, maybe, one of them, that describes what is knowledge. Until I read Bhagavad Gita and I read that statement where Krishna says, here's what knowledge is. It was a striking statement because you wonder, you know, you go through kindergarten, they make you learn how to finger paint and do all kinds of things. And then, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, there's all this learning. I always used to wonder all the way through school, why am I doing this? Now, why are we doing this again? When I got to high school, I said, forget it. I'm not doing it anymore because it didn't make sense. But then when I read Bhagavad Gita and he said, this is knowledge. This is knowledge to understand the difference between these two. That made perfect sense. So that's what Krishna says. The body is a kshetra. It's a field. It's a machine. He describes another ishara sarvabhutanam. Yantra Rudrani Maya, he calls it a yantra. We're driving around in this yantra. So to know the difference between that and the consciousness, to see the consciousness, be aware of it, is knowledge. And then above that and along with that, there's also the super consciousness, who's Krishna. Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yovatitati Kaman. There's nectar in this verse, although it's kind of a straightforward verse. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. It's a verse saying that there are eternals. There are conscious entities. And there's a plural group, and then there's one supreme who is maintaining all those other ones. And I can observe in my own life how I'm being maintained. In a state of false ego, I might think that I'm maintaining myself. And this Krishna says, prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. He calls such a person who thinks that he or she is maintaining themselves to be vimudha, very foolish. They don't understand they're being maintained and that the material nature is carrying out all these actions of the material body and so on and so forth. So bhakti, is Krishna is describing in this verse how Krishna is a sentient being and he's equal to everyone, but he shows affection, special favor to those who are surrendered to him. And this is a natural thing. It's natural to have this kind of affection. That affection is called priti. And sneha means affection. And you can see it in every species of life. When I was in Govardhan, there was an ashram nearby the Govardhan ashram that is belongs to Partasarthi Maharaj. And he has lots of disciples that come there and stay there. And so Nirkula stayed there for a few days. And so I walked her over there I went to check the place out first. And when I went there the first time, because there's so many monkeys in Vrindavan, and they cause a lot of problems to your property, damage, I should say. I mean, whatever there is that, especially if it's new and shiny and they know you just built it, they'll jump in and break that first. Then they'll break everything else. So some places they put this protection up with these bars. So Maharaj had put bars around the whole property so that you have a little peace inside. You don't have to worry about the monkeys. But when I got there, a baby monkey had slipped through because it's small enough for this little baby to slip through. And there were about 30 other monkeys on the other side going crazy all at the same time. You've seen monkeys go crazy. And the chokidar was there. There were three chokidars, and they were trying to get the monkey to go back out. And they had a big stick. And of course, the other monkeys assumed that he was trying to skewer the little monkey and kill him or something. So they really went crazy. And then I heard Prabhupada speaking about how he was sitting in his room and in Radhadamodar, I think it was, and a little baby monkey got through the bars. And the mother was on the other side. And so Prabhupada said, and the little kitty, he got in, and the mother couldn't get in, and the mother became extremely distraught until Prabhupada was able to push the little baby outside. So he was saying, in every species, you'll see this sneha, this affection. It's a natural thing. But as Queen Kunti says in her prayers, sneha pashamidam chindi, she says, please sever my tie of affection for my family members, the Pandavas and the Rishnis, and let it be, let me attach it to you. So, of course, you know, Prabhupada explains in that section of the Bhagavatam, bhakti doesn't mean that we become indifferent and detached from emotions and our relationships with others. But it does mean that we turn our attention to Krishna as the center and we develop our affection for him. And this is actually the most natural thing in the world. It's the most natural thing in the world, and it is simple also. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhaktyu paritam ashnami pariyatmanah. There's so much nectar in this one verse that Krishna says, if you offer me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So this is a reciprocation. We can feel the reciprocation. And when we offer something to Krishna, if we do it with love, this is what Krishna actually wants. He doesn't need water. He doesn't need an apple. He creates all these things just by his will. But what he does appreciate and what he does crave is the love of the living entities. So with love and devotion, if I offer a leaf of flower, fruit, or water, something simple, anything, if I offer to Krishna with full consciousness as a sentient being, then he reciprocates. And there's love in that exchange. And the devotee feels that love and is propelled forward in his or her service, feeling that I want to give more to Krishna. I want to give everything to Krishna. Krishna is the supreme taker. Bhoktaram jagatapasam. He says, I'm the supreme enjoyer. I can eat unlimitedly. Like when Krishna became Govardhan Hill, he expanded himself into enormous form and became the hill. His teeth were so big that it took big bamboo stalks. He could use them as toothpicks to clean his teeth when he was taking all this boga that was being offered to them. The townspeople came in and they were offering huge stacks of puris and rice from everywhere they could get rice and cooking it and bringing it in huge baskets and offering it. And Govardhan kept saying, Anior, Anior, give me more, give me more. And they were running out of everything. The whole town was gone. They were running everywhere to get more boga and bring it, cook it and bring it. And the more they brought, the more Krishna says, Anior, Anior, give me more, insatiable. And then finally Balaram, knowing the science, he took a tulsi leaf and he went up and he fed it to the Lord and he became satisfied. Similarly, when Advaita Acharya was calling for Lord Chaitanya's descent, he was so distraught. In fact, he's Mahavishnu, actually, and he incarnates as Advaita Acharya, and it's he who invites the Lord to come into the world. So he saw the condition of the people in the world, and Vaishnavas are compassionate. They're paradukaduki. They feel sorry for the suffering of others. They feel sorry when they see others not getting Krishna consciousness. In fact, I just read a story today. I'll just read it to you. I just thought of this. This is from Giriraj Maharaj. He's in Africa right now. And I just got an email from him that I think you'll like. Thoughts at Zoo Lake. That's in Johannesburg. I was exhausted when I set foot on South African soil this morning, but the love and enthusiasm of the devotees at the airport gave me new life. This evening, I went for a walk at Zoo Lake. Some people on a bench began to throw pieces of bread on the grass around them, and waterfowl, more than 100, came from all directions to partake. I was surprised. From a distance, the ducks and geese looked peaceful and happy in their beautiful surroundings. But inside, they were hungry. Not a single one remained on the lake. They all came for food. And I thought, all living beings, however attractive or well-placed they seem, have an inner hunger for love, for Krishna. And it is our duty, our privilege, and ultimately our pleasure to feed them. I pray to be able to do so nicely. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna, your servant, Giriraj Swami, Haribol. So, Vaishnavas, that's their preoccupation. Their preoccupation is serving Krishna. And then they naturally see that others are hungry. And they want to give them the same thing, same opportunity. So, Advaita Acharya, he saw that the people were starving for Krishna consciousness. And they were innocent people, were being poisoned by all kinds of deviant philosophies. So out of his compassion for the world, he began to pray that the Lord would personally come and rectify the situation. This is how we should pray also when we chant. When we chant our japa, we should think, Krishna, please come rectify this situation. The material world is so dangerous. It's such a dangerous place. And it is certifiably crazy. Or I should say, everyone who's in material consciousness is certifiably crazy. And crazy people can do anything at any time. And also, there's upheaval from the modes of material nature. What is a calm sea now can be a huge storm, and my whole life can be turned upside down. In fact, you can count on it. You can count on it. And we don't know when it's going to come in or how it's going to come in. It's a very dangerous situation. This is what we should learn and hear from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and from all the other great acharyas. So Advaita Acharya, I was saying, we can pray like Advaita Acharya to the Lord. As he prayed, he was sitting before his deity, that was a Shalagram Shila, and he was making loud cries, asking the Lord to descend, to please come rectify the situation. And then he read in the Shastra that the way to invoke the full attention and compassion of the Lord is by offering Ganga water and Tulsi leaves. A little Ganges water and Tulsi, he read in the Puranas, and the Lord becomes purchased by the devotee. So that became his method. He would sit down before his deity, he would offer Ganges water and Tulsi leaves, and with loud cries ask the Lord, please appear. Later on, we read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, he said, O Nara, he referred to Advaita Acharya as Nara, that your loud cries awoke me, and I came here to rectify the world. So Krishna was pleased by some Ganga water and Tulsi leaves, a simple thing, and this heartfelt plea by the devotee. So this is bhakti. If we offer the Lord what he likes, we hear from Shastra what the Lord likes, and we offer that with love and devotion to the best of our ability, he'll accept that. And that reciprocation is the lifeline of the devotee. It's actually the lifeline of every living entity, and without it, my life becomes insignificant and dry. And I look for that kind of affection in all kinds of temporary situations. But look for it, I do. We can argue that actually what everyone's looking for is this relationship and this affection. And it requires another sentient being. Because minus that, if we have everything else in the world, we won't be happy. If we give Gaurang Kishore Prabhu a beautiful palace and all the trappings of a palace, like furniture and swimming pool, what else could he have? Gardens? No gardens. Because we're not going to give him any living entities. What else? Cars? We'll give him a whole garage full of cars. Television? What else? Huh? Legos. We'll drive in tractors full of Legos for him. The only one stipulation is there's no living entities allowed. No other living sentient being can be there, including plants. And after about 3 days, he'll become emaciated and dried up. And if one bird flies into his palace, that bird will become the object of his affection. It's natural because there's consciousness there. So Krishna is the supreme consciousness. And if I direct my attention to him and I give my affection to him, he can fully reciprocate. And he's like a desire tree. Samaham sarva bhuteshu. He's saying, I'm equal to everyone, but if someone comes in and asks for something from me, I'll fulfill his desire. So Krishna consciousness is the process of purifying our desire. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmanyanavritam anukulyena krishna anushilanam bhaktirutama. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. It means to become free from any other desire. That means karma and jnana. These are the two sides of the material world that perpetuate my material existence, that have to do with bhoga and tyag. On the side of karma, if I have a feeling for karma, means bhoga. I want to enjoy something in the material world. And there's millions of ways to try to do that, working hard to save up something so that I can enjoy. And Krishna speaks about this in the 9th chapter also, how people who know how to work within the framework of the Vedas, they can accumulate great pious activities and go to heavenly planets where you can enjoy for a long time. But then, shinye punye martya lokam vishanti, they use that up and they fall back down again into who knows where, into a lower position of life. And on this cycle goes of bhoga, trying to enjoy. And then the other side, jnana, means tyag, means to renounce the world. And that state is not a stable existence either, because I need activity and I need reciprocation. So bhoga and tyag are the two sides of the river in the material world. But bhakti means full engagement in sense activities, but they're sense activities for the Lord. And in other words, bhakti is all about sense gratification, but it's about satisfying the senses of Krishna, satisfying Krishna's senses. And when Krishna's senses are satisfied, then my senses become satisfied automatically, the science of Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj gives this example that if you decorate your face and you look in the mirror, then you'll see that the reflection is also decorated. So he says that the Lord doesn't need anything from me. And when I offer something to the Lord, it's not for his benefit. Whose benefit is it for? Mine. So when a devotee is connected like this, he gives everything to Krishna because he realized that's really my self-interest. And he's experiencing the reciprocation that the more I give to Krishna, the more I'm actually satisfying myself. I'm like a finger on the hand, and it's assisting in feeding the stomach, and then it's becoming nourished. And then the devotee has no other interest except for serving Krishna, giving everything to Krishna. Why else? Why would I give anything anywhere else besides to Krishna? Because he's the center of everything. And it's in my interest to satisfy Krishna. Therefore, he's called Atmanam Akhilatmanam. He's the soul of my soul, or the self of myself, as Shukadeva Goswami points out in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, that the devotee sees that the soul of my soul is Krishna. He's the source of my very soul. So this is the beginning of all auspiciousness, to realize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's a person. He's a sentient person. And if I direct my attention to him and give my love to him and give whatever I have to him, then I become wealthy. I become satisfied. Bhakti parishanu bhavo viraktir anyatra traisha trika eka kala. Simultaneously, bhakti thrives when someone surrenders to Krishna. He also sees Krishna for him or herself, and simultaneously also becomes detached from all other kinds of things. The same way as a person who eats food when they're hungry feels nourishment, satisfaction, and the hunger goes away. It happens simultaneously, all those three things. So the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is that we should surrender to Krishna. And there's a process for doing that. And if I'm in that process and surrendering to Krishna, then my life is productive and I'm on the auspicious path in life. And to the degree that I'm disconnected from that, that's the degree to which I will experience frustration and frustration and all the anomalies that go along with material life. They can all be solved through the process of Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Any question? Yes. So Keshri, can you wait just for the microphone, please? Go ahead.
Krishna,
Hare Krishna.
I was just reading Bhagavad Gita, and I realized that Krishna tells he is the mind, and then why is it so difficult to control the mind? Then, I mean, I understand that it's a kind of a test that you have to go through to be able to be at the spiritual world, because to control the mind is the most difficult thing that Krishna himself tells, but then he also tells he's the mind. What is the reason that a person has to undergo No, because mind is the most difficult. I mean, it can be the best friend and the worst enemy. So my question is, why is it necessary to... I mean, even though it is Krishna himself, why is it not that easy and why is it more difficult?
So your question is, why is it so hard to control the mind?
Yes. and that Krishna is mind. I mean, I understand that as...
Of the senses, I am the mind. You're referring to the 10th chapter of the Gita where Krishna says, yeah. Of senses, I am the mind, right? And then you're saying, so why is it so hard to control the mind?
Yes. I mean, yes.
Well, it could be done. Krishna says by proper action and by detachment, one can control the mind, you know, through a gradual process. So whether it's, you know, difficult or not, you know that it's possible and the process is there. So I should be optimistic about it. Just like, you know, when I get sick, why do I feel so bad? When I'm ill, then I'm in an adverse condition. I'm facing, you know, I feel pain because I'm sick. So when the mind is not connected to Krishna, then there's a adverse situation. So I feel out of sync, and I am out of sync. But there is a process for controlling the mind.
I was thinking this in the context of non-devotees, actually. I understand that devotees, once they start surrendering, the control of mind becomes more easier because they're totally dependent on Krishna. But, you know, I mean, I was just thinking that even for non-devotees, you know, control, if they could control the mind, they wouldn't be in trouble. So why is it that, you know, controlling the mind, I know it's a process, and I feel that it's so hard for anybody who hasn't... is it because they desire to have the material things?
Krishna... I mean, when you're sick, you have to get better. And there's a process for doing that. And when you're in the middle of the process, you're still feeling some of the effects of that. And it's not unusual. It's something Krishna tells Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the mind has fearsome godlike powers over the living entity, has been keeping us here since a time immemorial. And really, he gives the solution in the Bhagavad Gita, manmana bhavamat bhakto, concentrate your mind on me, because ultimately the mind can feel satisfaction in Krishna. And it will, as we take up that process of fixing our mind on Krishna over and over again, after a while, the mind will have actually feel satisfaction in thinking of Krishna. So why it's so difficult is because we're in an abnormal condition. It causes a problem when we're in an abnormal or an ill condition.
Just wanted to know that I know that Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita that you know, people who go back to, you know, Vartante, Tadamam Paramamama, he says that if some devotee comes back to the spiritual world, he will never come back. I mean, he will never go back to the material world. So in that case, what is the main reason that spirit souls actually fell down?
Oh, you're going to ask that like the end of class, right? The reason is because Krishna is like a big fire and we're like sparks. Krishna is the blazing fire and we're like sparks. The spark has a tendency, if it strays from the fire, to be extinguished and to lose its fire-like quality. The main fire doesn't lose its fire-like quality because it's the main fire. So Krishna is the main fire, and we're little sparks of that fire. Quality, we're the same, but quantity, we're very tiny. So because of the tininess of the soul, it's chitkana, it's a tiny little particle of consciousness, there's choice. There's independence, just as Krishna has supreme independence, we have minute independence. And similarly, there's the possibility of falling down or becoming captured by Maya because of the tiny size of the soul.
Yeah, that's what my question is, Prabhu. So if somebody gets liberated and goes back to Goloka, that means for sure the person will again not use his independence and come back?
Yeah. It means for sure they won't misuse their independence and come back. But because of the tiny nature of the soul, that philosophically we maintain the possibility that it's there. But he won't.
But he won't?
No. Krishna says he doesn't. Once he comes back home, he doesn't come back again. But because of his constitutional nature, possibilities always... We say the possibility is there for him to come down from that position. Understanding this, the fall of the Jiva, Prabhupada gave us, it's a conundrum from my perspective, because I'm caught within the realm of time and my mind works in that realm of time. To understand something that's beyond time is beyond my comprehension at this point. Prabhupada gave us the crow and tall, which means there's a tall tree with a tall fruit hanging from it, and there's two sadhus sitting underneath it, and then the tall fruit, the crow flies away and the tall fruit falls down. The two sadhus sitting there begin an argument, and one says that the fruit broke off from the vine, it shook the tree, and the crow flew away. And the other one said, the crow flew away, that's what shook the tree, and the fruit fell down. Fruit fell down one way or another, but they're going back and forth. And therefore he said, you know, the conundrum of seeing, you know, from where the soul fell down. Prabhupada generally says, well, let me put it to you like this. There's nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam where there's a very, very specific description of the fall of the soul. In some places, for instance, in the fourth canon of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says it is a fact that no one falls down from Vaikuntha. At other times, he talks about how the soul can fall down from Vaikuntha. But the preponderance of philosophy on this, generally, like we say, somehow or other, I've fallen into this material world. Like in the Shikshashtakam, the translation of the verse is, somehow or other, I've fallen into this material world. Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, somehow or other, we've fallen. I cannot understand exactly how it happened. Krishna knows. But the psychology behind it is important. Why you're asking the question, why you want to know, that's important. Because ultimately, to take responsibility for the fact that I fell and it's nobody else's fault, this is the correct understanding. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano bunjana eva makritam vipakam. To have the feeling or the mentality that I did it, I've created this. Vedanta Sutra describes it as anadi karma, beginningless. That's how it solves the conundrum. It says, we've been here forever, from a beginningless time. In other places, there's description how, well, that means before creation. That's a long time, whatever it is. It's a long time, and I'm implicated now. So the idea is that I should get out.
I was just thinking that that's why it's not a very easy, I mean, it does seems to be easy, but still you will have to go through a lot of obstacles and, you know,
yes.
Lots of things to reach.
Yes, you will. And
so then you know that, you know, when you work hard for something, you will never make a mistake again.
Yes, and the soul being rescued from the material world, from an impossible situation, which is duratyaya, is one of the glorious pastimes of the Lord. And after all, we are the Lord's energies. We say we're different, but we're also one at the same. So who he's actually saving? I mean, he's interacting with his own energies and souls being saved. But it is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jiva Dharma that this is the most glorious pastime of the Lord. It's mentioned by Srila Prabhupada also in the prayers personified Veda, that the most glorious pastime of the Lord is saving the soul from an impossible situation in the material world, bringing him back home, back to Godhead. And yes, it's impossible to get out. That's why Krishna says, Daivahi esha guna mayi mama maya duratya. You're not getting out of this. But if you surrender, Krishna's mercy is so powerful that he'll save us. And also you may note that great souls and acharyas who come to this world to also assist the Lord in his pastimes, they also relish the position of being a fallen soul. You'll see Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his emotion, in his poetry, speaking about how I'm a fallen soul. Because it's so relishable to take that position and be rescued by the Lord's mercy.
Thank you.
Yes?
Does Jiva enjoy his Independence Day? The time when he's falling down, choosing this, working on this independence, right?
So Krishna, when he misuses his independence, you mean? Does he enjoy
it? Well, yeah. Does Jiva enjoy that or not?
Well, for some time he does. But like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, happiness in the mode of passion, it seems like nectar in the first, and then in the end it's like poison. Seemed like a good idea at the time, but now I got it. Now I'm implicated, and I have to suffer. You know, this is happiness. As we read earlier, Prabhupada said, in the material world, there's misery and mixed happiness. Don't you hate mixed happiness? Sweet rice with sand in it. It looks like it should be good, right? But it's like there's a little gritty in there, and it just, or someone gives you the most beautiful preparation. Here's a pie, and it's like, it's burnt, and you have to eat it anyway. The material life is like that. It's we read this the other morning, right? It's tainted. It's tinged. You know, you put a little drop of color in it, and then the color changes in it. It's just not the same. You can't ever get that. The material world's tinged with the three modes of material nature. So the soul is described in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. He enters into the forest of material enjoyment, thinking that there's some prospect there. All be happy. But it's in the mind. That's why Krishna later says, prajahati yada kamam sarvam karma manogatam, that it's all coming from the mind. It's being created here that I think I'm going to become happy. And when somebody gives that up, that idea, you realize it's just an idea I'm going to be happy, but I don't actually ever touch it. I don't actually ever get it. It's a reflection. The fruit reflected in the water, I can't enjoy that fruit. It's not substantial. So Prahlad Maharaj also says, Kutra Shisha Shuti Sukham Rigatrishni Rupa. Where is it? You hear about it, but you don't actually get it. So it looks like a good idea. And, you know, the soul, it could see Krishna, see Maya side by side, and can choose the wrong thing. He's tiny and fall into that trap. And Krishna comes to save him. He's fallen into the trap of Maya. A reflection of the sun in a mirror, it's as bright as the sun. It looks just like it.
Did Prahlad Maharaj then answer that question?
Where is the happiness? Yeah, sure. Yeah, he talks about how the real nectar of life is being the servant of the servant of the servant. He said, let me become the servant of your devotee. That's where he says the real happiness is. Being situated there. You were going to make a last point?
Yes. Regarding this...
You better turn that on, I think.
Regarding this point of saving the soul as a most miraculous pastime of Krishna, there are innumerable living entities all over the world. Is there any hope for Krishna that one day all are going to be saved?
That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked that question to Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur said that even in Ayodhya, when Ramchandra was there, that all the living entities that had the association of Lord Ram were liberated and went back to Godhead. But then it filled up again. He said that the universe will never be vacant. There are unlimited souls. Since they go, more will come. Doesn't make it any less significant that even one soul gets saved. It's a big deal. And if you read the Brihat Bhagavatamrita of Gopal Kumar going back to Godhead, you'll cry. I've seen a room full of devotees when hearing that pastime when Gopal Kumar goes in, and they're not taking it cheaply. They're actually feeling this emotion, you know, remembering what it's like. Bhagavatam's, there's some very choice verses about how, you know what it's like when you're a traveler and you're going everywhere. Traveling means you get whatever you get. And you got to hurry up and wait everywhere you go. Being at home means you get what you want. So, you know, he talks about a traveler being on the road, being weary, 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 and then coming home. And then everything is there. And so the soul comes home. And when you hear the individual story of Gopal Kumar and his journey home, how he tried everything in the universe, actually, every station he went to. And they all looked okay, and some of them looked great, and then they started to pale because they weren't his actual home. But when he goes back to Godhead, he feels full satisfaction going back and meeting Krishna again. And everyone who takes to the process of Krishna consciousness will eventually go back home, back to Krishna, and feel that full satisfaction. Even before we go back, you know, to Godhead, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes how the it's like we're gardeners and we're watering the seed of, you know that verse? What is it? Sheche Arupan. Yeah. Shebija Arupan. Yeah. So Shravanadi Jal. Means this, the water of hearing and chanting. So the seed sprouts, goes back to Godhead. It's living in the spiritual world, entangled in Krishna's lotus feet, and the gardener keeps watering the seed and is experiencing that connection with Krishna in the spiritual world. From even while being in this world, Krishna's mercy is so profound and powerful, especially Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the most merciful of all Krishna's incarnations and is giving everyone an opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bo, Hari Krishna. I have a page here of the colophons for, in case you want this, somebody can make copies of it for the... Colophon is a sound ornament that you hang on the end of your chapters when you chant a chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Supanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam. So this has for all the chapters. So would somebody like to volunteer? You can make copies for whoever wants one. And then you can take that with you when you chant your Gita. So now we'll have Artik. And let's put away all the books and the asanas as quickly as possible.